here's what we're gonna do.
Ron,
we're gonna
come quick. They've gone wild. The girls have gone wild.
I pulled these two off each other.
Coach Carr, step away from the underage girls.
Let me help you down there.
Whoa! Hell no! I did not leave the south side for this.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from ColdSploitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Mark.
How's it going?
Pretty good. This is the first time we've been back since Halloween, and we're not going to have a haunted soundtrack behind us. All of our Halloween episodes, like last nine, they all had spooky sound effects.
Especially with Jack Black being Earlstein.
Yeah. This time we're back, and it's just going to be just us boringly talking.
With every now and then the Price is Right losing theme. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. No,
November's always, I say November's always a shitty month for us, because it's like after Halloween, we always go, now what?
Pretty much, yeah. You're kind of always like, the big season's over.
Now what?
What do we got next? Well, we already had something planned out, really. Quite far in advance, actually. We had the movie picked out. We even got the beer planned out quite far in advance, too. And, of course, we weren't going to roll right into Thanksgiving, because Thanksgiving's not really our podcast forte. Though I don't think it's anybody's really big forte. Even Hallmark's kind of like, we're going to put a whole bunch of Christmas movies on, but every now and then we'll throw in, like, Thanksgiving at the Macy's Day Parade. You know, like, the one movie they put out a year that's Thanksgiving-related.
So you know what we could do? We could do the Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon vehicle.
Just watch their voiceover work.
No. For Macy's Day Parade or this, whatever the hell they do. What the hell?
Yeah, they do like a little skit thing.
Well, it's not little. It's, you know, like a four rose parade, like the 4 hour. Yeah, Corn and Tish. There we go. I had to look it up because I forgot.
I feel like that would be a boring episode of the podcast, though, for us to just comment on the commentary that they're doing.
It's hilarious.
No, I know it is funny, but I don't think it would fly well for a good podcast episode.
Well, you know, we're not here for good podcast episodes. We're here for a good time.
Yeah, but we didn't want to roll right into Thanksgiving, even though it's, I think like Thanksgiving is in what, like 2 weeks now, 3 weeks, something like that?
No, we got Eli Ross.
That's right. We got Eli Roth. We got to wait that out. It doesn't come out till like the 21st or something, 17th or something like that.
Come on, Eli.
But no, we got to wait it out until just before Thanksgiving. So no, instead, what we wanted to do is we had actually the movie that we had picked out is kind of a perfect all year round pick, because, and especially for falling in between Halloween and Christmas, because the movie does have a large amount of holiday involved, and it kind of cycles through all of the holidays, really. But the major ones that it focuses on are Halloween and Christmas. And so it was a perfect opportunity to do that. And not only that, but serendipitously, there's also been a revival, even though it's not the 20th anniversary this year of this movie, but there's been a revival of late. Where Walmart has done a Black Friday ad featuring the cast of this movie. And also, they just literally today, as we're recording this episode, released the trailer for a new movie that they're coming out with that's sort of a remake, but also a rendition on the musical version of this movie.
It's going to be on Paramount Plus, and theaters too, which I yelled. It was a little sad.
I mean, but it's just weird though, isn't it? That we decided that we were going to do this movie and then all of a sudden, bam, bam, you're...
What is up though with, like, it's not just this movie, like, franchise, but like, franchises in general not hitting the anniversary marks. Like, they're always a year or two too soon, and they're always on, like, off years.
Well, this the Black Friday ad, for sure, is not hitting, because this movie released in 2004, so the 20th anniversary is next year, which is when the new remake musical is coming out. So they're you know, that's hitting the anniversary perfectly. Black Friday ad, not so much. So it's a question, I guess maybe they just wanted to tie it all in together. You know, hey, the movie's coming out soon. Here's a Black Friday ad to get your appetite whetted. But
it makes sense. It makes sense though, because if you have Walmart Plus, you also get Paramount Plus for free.
So. True. So they're just
it is a marketing
grand scheme.
It is simpatico on that.
Yeah,
but
I mean, of course, if you've been following pop culture, you know we're talking about Mean Girls, 2004. I think we've said on here a lot that we did want to cover it at some point. You mention it all the time.
Well, don't act like you don't love it. Everyone loves this movie.
This film
is a millennial classic.
I do love the movie, but you mention it more than I do. Like, you reference the dates and everything in the movie.
Seth Goldberg.
More so than I do, but yeah. So we missed that date though, October 3rd.
Well, we couldn't do that. If we ever did that, you would throw a conniption.
True.
Look, it's ruining Halloween. That'd be you. Like, hey, it's October 3rd. We're gonna do an episode on October 3rd. Let's do Mean Girls. You're like, no, I have to do an Hellraiser 6.
Sure. It's true. You're right about that. Mean Girls is I saw it in theaters. I saw it in 2004. I do remember. I actually saw it with my wife's sister. And it had to have been like close to opening weekend, if not opening weekend. And even at that time, at the time too, people were like, you're going to see Mean Girls? You know, like, I don't know if it was family or friends or whatever. You're going to see Mean Girls? Really? That movie looks like it's trash. Sounds like it's for girls. And I saw it. I was like, no, it's a great movie. I loved it. I loved it at the time. I came home and I was like, it's an awesome movie. It's super funny.
I did not see it in theaters. I did see it soon after when it hit the video, because for the longest time on TBS, they ran it constantly.
Mm-hmm.
And great movie. It truly is a... millennial teen comedy classic.
Yeah, this is kind of like, you know, when we did She's All That, and we did Cruel Intentions, and those are, and Clueless even, and those are definitely nostalgic 90s movies, but Mean Girls is definitely, at least for our age group, is kind of like that movie for people of the 90s.
It's incredibly quotable.
Sure. And I'm just saying, like, nostalgically, if you were living through this time period, especially if you were in high school or, you know, middle school or, you know, in the schools at that time, this movie is infinitely more relatable to you than even the movies from the 90s. Because, yes, you know, when Cruel Intentions came out, we were alive. We did have some sentience at that time as, you know, what, like 10-year-olds or something. But it wasn't like
cocaine. What's this cocaine? It's just like a Parker's.
Right. It wasn't ingrained in our culture to know the whole pop culture references of those movies. So, Mean Girls is definitely that film for our generation. And I don't know if everybody feels that way, but I know a lot of people feel that
way. I don't know anybody that's of our age group that doesn't love Mean Girls.
It's right here.
It's pretty universefully, you know, loved.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, beautiful.
It just has that. Well, I don't know. I guess we'll talk about it. I'll let it linger as to what it has that is the appeal, the draw to our generation. And we'll talk about it. We'll talk about what brings us back to it, why it's so beloved, and a lot more. So before we get into that, though, let's take a break and talk about the beer that we have on the show today. Because like I said at the beginning, we did plan for this one. This is what, you know, normally we don't plan things. We're just like, I don't know, what movie you want to do next week? And then we pick it out. But this time we were like, okay, this is going to be our schedule. After Halloween hits, we're doing Mean Girls. And then we're getting this beer for it because it fits perfectly. And so that beer is KCBC's, which we've had on the show previously. I think we just had them like a couple weeks ago because I ordered the same. I ordered this beer along with those other Oktoberfests that we had. But we have KCBC, King County Brewers Collective. They're Mean Squirrels beer, because I think a running gag with KCBC is that they have squirrels on their cans. They got a lot of different running gags, but one of them is squirrels for whatever reason, unbeknownst to me. Why they do that.
I'm glad you said that, because I was about to ask, why the squirrels?
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know. I'm not really sure what the gag is, but yeah, they it's just the thing they do. They do that. They do, like, cats, right? Because we've had, like, Santa Claus and Jaws, or Paws, I mean,
yeah.
The Jaws crossover. Yeah. So they do a lot of those weird different things, and I don't really know the background behind those gags, but in this case, we got Mean Squirrels. And if you look at the can, it definitely has the font for Mean Girls. It has the characters, but they've been squirrelized. So now you've got a nice squirrel, Lindsay Lohan, with red hair on the front there. And you've got the Mean Girls in the back, the plastics. And they're also squirrels. And yeah, so it was just it was another serendipitous moment of KCBC releasing this beer at the same time we were thinking, hey, let's do Mean Girls. And it all just worked out. Here we are. Can't believe it. So anyway, this Mean Squirrels is a DDH IPA, which probably comes as a surprise.
So what is a DDH, Ryan?
It means double dry hopped. And what does that mean in terms of brewing, you may ask? I don't really know. You add dry hopped pellets to the whirlpool, I think. I don't know. In terms of brewing, I don't really know exactly what it will do. It probably brings out more of like the dankness of the hop or something. I don't know. It's a term that gets thrown around again and again, and everybody's like, oh, DDH. But I don't think anybody really knows exactly what it does. So, again, though, this is a double dry hopped hazy IPA, NIPA, basically. Though nothing on the can actually says NIPA.
It's NIPA. Well, it says hazy.
It says hazy, yeah. And this has Citra, Mosaic, Ruaca, and Vista hops. And I kind of pointed that out. I said, Vista? Vista I know is Windows.
The best.
I don't know Vista hops. But I think, so what I'm going to end up saying is probably going to be blaspheming to people who are real IPA connoisseurs, but what I will say about this beer is that I think it's a really solid, drinkable beer. It does not really, to me, stand out in terms of being a New England IPA or hazy IPA, or whatever you want to call it, in terms of like a uniqueness. It tastes very much like a very standard hazy IPA, a very good one, though, not like, on the lower scale of releases or like more mass marketed hazies. But at the same time, I don't really notice any particular qualities about it that I'm like, wow, that's something, you know?
Excuse me. Take a sip. KCBC, if you want to be a partner in this podcast at this point. It's like the 12th beer we've done. Hit us up at Blood Black Rum. No, it is a very good double NIPA. It hits all the notes that you want. It's very grapefruity, a little tangerine-y. The double dry hopness definitely does make the hoppiness kind of a little bit more prevalent and a little bit kind of like a West Coast style, because you do get a little bit of piney, or resiny
taste to it. It's very good. It's very drinkable. I don't think we've had KCBC beer on here, especially IPA, that's bad at all. But I think they do kind of, as good as they are and as well-crafted as they are, they do kind of fall in a sloop category of, like, you done good, but what makes it different? You know, that's for the sommeliers to figure out, because as good as it is, and as delightful as it is kind of hard to pick out, like, you know, the very nuanciness of it. I don't think I've ever had, like, you know, the hops, as you described. We've had them all except, like, Vista. I can't really think of a beer off the top of my head that's had Vista. So I don't, and it's not like they say on the can what that entails. So I don't know what you're supposed to get out of that, but it definitely does have, you know, a overly citrusy orange, tangerine, grapefruit taste to it that's very noticeable. I like it a lot. It's damn good, but, I mean, again, it's nothing that I would say you'd have to run out and get outside of the theme. The Mean Squirrels can, and, you know, if you're a Mean Girls fan.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a good, a really good beer. I think it's totally solid, drinkable, but again, it's just, I'm not really able to discern much difference between this one and, like, some of the other citrusy hazies. I think you hit it right on the head where it has that nice, like, orange tangerine-y kind of background to it with that citrus flavor, but it's not overtly orangey. It's just, you know, kind of a faint citrusy flavor, probably from mostly from the hops. So I think it's really good. It just, I don't know, it's just really standard for me, and that's not always a bad thing. Like, a solid 4 hazy is always a good thing to have on hand. It's just that I don't really have anything specific to say about it to say, like, wow, that's really intriguing, or there's something totally worth justifying, like, going out to find it. I don't really have anything to say about it in that sense. It's just really good, really solid beer. And again, like you said, we haven't really had a KCBC where we didn't think it was a solid beer. So it's always a positive note to add to a brewer. Like, you can't think of a bad one. So yeah, Mean Squirrels. I think you can find it, at least you could find it on their website. If they ship to you, they do ship to New York State.
Thank God.
Yeah. And with free shipping too.
Which is also very rare.
Yeah. Beer shipping for, yeah, man.
Especially in this state. Like, that's like that being in New York, that's kind of godsend, because, like,
yeah,
beer delivery that, you know, we get around here now, like, you can get, oh, you wanted the beer, it's $50. That's another $50 for, you know, the delivery fee. And you're like, fuck that.
Yeah.
But at least, and that's kind of as I think Ryan has alluded to before, last time we did KCBC. This is why we've been kind of drinking it more, because, like, you can just order it online. They don't even charge for fucking delivery.
That's pretty great. And, you can get, like, you don't even need to order, like, a minimum. I think you can order, like, three, four packs, and that's it. And you can get free delivery. It's great. Why not at that point? So Mean Squirrels, check it out if you can find it. Especially now, as we're having a Mean Girls revival, you want to save the can. All right, so let's talk about Mean Girls. As we said, Mean Girls is full of nostalgia. It's full of quotable references. And I feel like
the movie should be called a different name.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the movie should be called Lindsay Lohan and Our Ass Crack Hangs Out.
Well, you bring up a good point. The movie does capture one thing very well, and that's the fashion of the mid-2000s.
Mid-2000s chic. And out of all the things, like, if anyone were to sit down and bitch and moan about, like, oh, that's an inappropriate joke, or, oh, that hasn't aged well at all. It's the fashion. It's the fashion, by far, that hasn't aged well at all. Not even close. None of the fashion, and I pray to God it's true, from this fucking era that we had to go through and survive, is going to come back.
You mean you don't want like hair that looks like it's been wet down, but it's really not. It's just the
literally the only person in this terrible cavalcade of fashion. The only one that looks, you know, today passable is Janice and Tina Fey. That's it. For everyone else, is like a nightmare, a fashion nightmare. You look back at 80s and 90s and like 70s films, you're like, oh, you know, at the time, you're like, oh, that looks stupid. But compared to the 2000s, now that we're like 20 years out, it's awful. And what an awful, horrid decade for fashion. I can't believe this is what people thought was good, you know, good taste.
Yeah, because you have like the flat hair, you know, really flat, straightened bangs, flat to the forehead sort of hair. You've got
these incredibly small frame glasses, you know, like Tina Fey's wearing, and just, you know, like
polo shirts galore
for the dudes. Everyone's wearing low riding jeans, so their ass cracks are hanging out. These incredibly stupid high skirts, but they're also, you know, pink. And then, you know, your spaghetti straps with like random with nonsense on it, like punk girl, you know. Amy Poehler wearing like the pink, you know,
Bluers,
you know. Oh, it's so bad.
What do they call that? What the fuck do they call that? That was like, like the haute couture, juicy couture, velour shit. That where it was like, says like, shit on the ass.
Juicy.
Yeah. On the ass. It's like, I sure hope it's not juicy. Had a particularly wet fart.
Well, no one who ever wore that had actually had like a juicy ass. It's like flat ass.
Right, because the velour itself did make it like pancaked just because of the fabric itself.
Yes,
like, it was designed to not be conforming.
Yeah, it's just bad fashion all around. Like, Lindsay Lohan would look acceptable if she wasn't wearing low-riding jeans. Like, she wore like normal jeans. Like, some of her stuff, like, in hindsight, being like, it's not that bad. But the fact that like she's wearing these tight, you know, V-neck, and especially because at the time Lindsay Lohan was like, you know, popular because, you know, her tits were hanging out everywhere. She's wearing like, you know, these, you know, V-neck shirts or, you know, cleavage. At least it would look better if she had like, you know, normal pants. But because she's wearing mid-2000s low-riding pants, her ass crack is hanging out for everyone to see. Especially now in Blu-ray and 1080p, you can see everything. It's like, you know, as she's sitting down in the chair, and it's like, there it is.
Which is surprising to me because normally, like, when you watch movies like that, they're pretty careful not to get butt crack like that.
It is the style.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it was a choice at that point. It was like, her butt crack is showing when she sits down in that chair. Now, keep it.
Tina Fey sat there and she's like, you keep it. You keep that ass.
Mark Waters sat there and he said, you keep it. Which it kind of brings me to, you know, the direction on this movie. Mark Waters, the director, he did Freaky Friday. He directed Freaky Friday in 2003 with Lindsay Lohan.
He started with The House of Yes.
Yeah, he started with The House of Yes. And then he did Freaky Friday in 2003, worked with Lindsay Lohan, came back again, did Mean Girls in 2004 with Lindsay Lohan, co-written by Tina Fey. And
it's also, which I realized, Weisman. I didn't realize, it's a Lorne Michaels production, too.
It is. Yep, it is. It's an SNL production, basically.
I did not realize.
That's why you've got...
was part of Lauren Michaels' oeuvre, you know.
Yeah, that's why you've got Tina Fey, Tim Meadows.
No, it makes sense, but I mean, it's because, again, Lauren's films are incredibly, incredibly hit or miss. For every Wayne's World, there's, you know, some bullshit that you're like, really, Lauren?
I think over time he's gotten more careful with what he puts the Lauren Michaels name on the production, you know. But yeah. I know what you mean. But yeah, like Mark Waters, though, did a lot of, I shouldn't say a lot, but he did a number of like rom-coms and like teen movies. So he did Just Like Heaven. He did Vampire Academy, which is like a, you know, teen vampire sort of like Harry Potter bullshit. And then if we go up a little ways, in 2021, he directed the She's All That remake. He's All That.
I don't. That never happened.
Oh, and it did. It sure did.
No, it didn't.
I didn't see it, but it was a Netflix movie, a Netflix original.
Yeah. Didn't happen.
Didn't watch it, though. You're going to, yeah, I mean, it was definitely updated for the time. There's like TikTok stuff in it and things like that. I didn't see it, though. I don't know. But I just thought it was...
They made sure to shove that, too, in the new Mean Girls movie. All the tic-tacs and shit.
Yeah. I just want to point it out, though, because I thought it was funny. You know, we already did She's All That, and...
I need to watch He's All That. Matthew Lillard is in it as the principal.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. I mean, you need to see it. So, yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting. He eventually would go on to... direct He's All That, a remake of a very influential older movie that we also covered.
Listen, watch that. Yeah, it's great. Oh, he also directed 500 Days of Summer, which, you know.
Yes, he did.
Zooey Deschanel film.
Yep. So, going off of it, so we talked about the fashion, of course. Talked about the fashion.
It's terrible.
And it's terrible.
And if you live during the time period, especially if you're like, you know, our age, anywhere between 30 and 35, you feel it.
Like, oh, yeah.
Watching this, like, you know. It's,
you feel the shame. The shame creeping in. Did I wear something like that?
And it's terrible. Like, it's literally the most jarring thing about watching this movie. Like, that kind of little takes me aback. I can't believe, like, you know, you're going to your local mall for clothes shopping for, you know, for school, and you're like,
and you come away with that. Yeah. But outside of the fashion, what do you think about, how do you feel about how Mean Girls portrays school at the time?
Well, it ain't anything like our schools. Like, as, we say every time we do a teen school film, not like our school at fucking all.
Mm-hmm.
These big campuses filled with hundreds of kids.
Who had a back school room? Like, they, you know, at the beginning of the movie, where they're like, oh, your health class. I think that's in the back. Yeah, the back house. The back office school. Or whatever.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, that's not a thing. You know?
Where are you taking me? Like, you know.
Yeah, they're taking me into the woods, slender manning me.
No, I mean, it's typical. I mean, it's no different than every other high school film you do. Because, I mean, especially if you grow up in a small town, none of these films you can ever relate to. Because the schools are these gigantic campuses of, like, thousands of kids. And you're like, our valedictorian was a duck. Like, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
You know? But I will say one thing, especially in 2004, that this film gets down. Let's give it up for the gay representation here.
Absolutely.
You know, Damien is a queen.
I do love, too, when they keep bringing up, like, he's too gay to function. And it was like, it's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, it's just a running joke that, you know, that's who he is. And, yeah, the film totally takes that in stride. And it's just like, yeah, he's gay, you know, and does a great job with it. I think it really does handle that very well. You know, and of course that on the other side of things, though, like, they still are, you know, both Janice and Damien are technically outsiders. They're not really perceived well by the rest of their class. They kind of stick to their own demographic. And not only that, but Janice is actually accused of being lesbian, and that's like a bigger deal, right? That's being a lesbian is a bigger deal than just being gay like Damien is, which I think is interesting.
But it doesn't make sense, though, for the time, because, again, like, you know, if you think about, you know, mid-2000s and being gay, it's, like, much more taboo, especially coming, you know, from a smaller town. But I think the way, you know, kind of
you know, Lindsay Lohan and others kind of play it. You know, it makes, you know, obviously, like, oh, no, it's, it gives a shit. And at the end, especially, that's, like, the most striking thing about this film, too, especially in 2023, is the fact that the crux of what gets everything going is Janice trying to get back at Regina because she was called a dyke, and she's pissed off that people think she's a lesbian. And that now being, like, yeah, like, pussy, like, who gives a shit, like, you know, like... So, like in the 20 years, like, it is kind of, like, great because, like, oh, you know, it is very pro, you know, it is, for the time, you know, very understanding of homosexuality. But at the same time, like, that being, like, kind of the crux now is stupid. Like, think about, like, oh, no, you like to eat pussy. Like and you're a girl. Who gives this shit?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, like, but... it totally doesn't resonate in today. You know, especially because the fact, like, constantly, the film could have ended within the first 20 minutes. Like, oh, Regina George called her. And she's like, damn, man. You know, she's like, just some good kid. She called me gay. Like, who gives a shit?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, the movie is definitely of its time because I think school has definitely changed quite a bit in terms of what's accepted, what is considered, like, the in-click. You know, like, the plastics now probably wouldn't be the in-click anyway, you know, in terms of who people think of as the most popular kids at school. Whereas also, I don't think Janice would be considered the outsider, like the, you know, she's definitely different and she would have her own set of clique, that, you know, that would be her friend. So I think like the dynamic in this movie is kind of interesting because it does set out, I think it was true to form at the time. It does set out dynamics that were at the time, probably very similar in many different schools. At least not in our school so much, you know, because they also they point out like how they have like a Vietnamese section. It's like we didn't have any very many Asians in our school.
Not only that, the whole like blacks who are, you know, yeah, you know, get too high.
Yeah,
we didn't have that. Well, it's the same thing too. I mean, like again, like films like this, even though this film's really good, and like I don't hold any film that's got like all these clicks when it comes to high school films like to fault. We can't relate because we went to a school where our graduating class was 80 kids. So it's like the jocks are also smart and they also do this, this, and this. And it's like we didn't have like cliques at our school because it's like there's literally fucking 80 kids. So like everyone was kind of like talking to everybody, whether, you know, there's the more artsy type or whatever. You know, it's just, again, I'm not holding that against this film or anything. Cause I mean, it is kind of like weird to think about. Cause it's like, yeah, Ryan and I played soccer together, you know, and he was better than me in soccer, and I sat the bench, but we were both, like, 90 students, like, you know, so it's like, nerds and jocks,
right?
So we didn't have football at our school. We could play for soccer, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely, like, I think we're an outlier in that, but, like, bigger places probably would have much the same dynamic as what Mean Girls sets out, and I think it's definitely different now. But I think it does what it does a good job of doing too is just showing the overall shit show that is school in both in terms of people who go to school, kids who have to deal with going to school, and also people in the school, you know, like Tim Meadows and Tina Fey as the teachers and principals and things like that, who have to deal with this on a daily basis, trying to navigate very volatile conditions of teenagers and angst and things like that. That they do well because they show it in a, like a fairly realistic way. And I actually also kind of relate it back to animalism, right? Like they're basically just beasts in this school because puberty is running rampant. And
I say you popped a half chub at Tina Fey taking her top off and her bra showing.
Tim Meadows did. No, it's hilarious because you just see him. She's like, we can have this discussion after my shirt's not see-through. And he just, like, stares down at her chest and, like, does, like, a couple quick glances.
She gets her coffee spilled on her, and then she's, like, taking her shirt off. And it's like, she's like, oh, it's sticking to my sweater, isn't it? It's like, oh, Tina, you
devil. I know. No, it's like, but I really like that. I think it does a really good job. It's funny because... Now, I do think the school dynamic has changed a lot. There's even that scene where everybody's gone crazy because the burn book's been shared. And Tim Meadows says, I have parents calling asking what's going on. Someone thought there was someone shot. And it was like,
No. That's not even the best line that he says during that, when he's like, I did not leave the South this time.
Yeah.
South side for this shit. And then he breaks the fire alarm. Like, I like that every time gets me like cracking up. It's like, oh, hell no, I did not leave the South. And like, Coach Carr, stay away from the underage.
Yeah. Please let go of the underage girls.
Not only that, like during like the whole session, he's like, I'm going to teach you to be like ladies. And like, it's like fresh off a couple ladies, man. He's saying ladies like fucking from the
ladies.
Ladies. And she's like, I can't help it if I have a wide set vagina and I have heavy flow. And he's like, Tina Fey?
Yeah. Well, actually, what I really like about Tim Meadows, too, is, like, he's got a bat just sitting around behind him. Yeah. He immediately grabs for it when they come in. They're like, Ron, something's going on out there.
The girls have gone wild.
The girls have gone wild. And he just turns around and fucking grabs the bat.
Not like that, too. He's scared. Tim Meadows is an unsung hero in this. So I will keep you here all night. You can't keep him past 4. I will keep you here till 4 o'clock. Like, you know,
Tim Meadows has always been my favorite part of this movie. He's, you know, because he's relatable as a principal. He's not like that. He's not like the over hard headed, hard bearing principal that you get in some of the movies, you know, where it's like no one wants to go see that guy. He's also not. Yeah, he's also not completely aloof either. He's like right in the middle, and it's great. And he plays it so well. You know, my favorite part is too, like, because the film has almost. You know, it's got like your regular narrative, but it also has almost like a documentary style too at times, where it's like interviewing the people around school, like somebody, you know, is getting interviews for these people, and they get an interview with him.
Inspiration for The Office?
A bit, yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, because it's an interesting director's choice to do that. You have the narrative, you have Lindsay Lohan being the narrator, like basically providing all this information, and then you have a documentary style interview with people as though, like, are you supposed to think Lindsay's the one that's interviewing them? I don't know, but it's an interesting idea to get that interview, and even played up in the Walmart commercial. You know, they do the same sort of like documentary interview to like capture that feel. It was a really cool part of Mean Girls, I think, and Tim Meadows shines in that as well, because they interview him like, and he's all too eager to spread the gossip. To, you know, the two were seen canoodling. It's always been my favorite line.
At Chris Eisen's party.
Yeah.
They've been inseparable ever since.
It's great. I think he does a fantastic job.
Yeah, no, Tim Meadows is definitely the most unsung hero in this film. Because he, like, again, and Tim Meadows might be one of the most unsung, like, SNL players of all time. He's always great. Always hilarious and like always on point. And so like here he's just like, you know, he's just great. Like,
I love the line where he says, I should cancel your spring fling. I'm not going to, because we already paid our DJ.
No, I love look when at the end when Katie's giving like a speech and he's like, you don't really have to give a speech.
Yeah.
And this keeps going on. And he's like, you know, you can wrap this up.
Yes, it's not customary to give a speech here. No, he's great. He's a fantastic part. Tim Meadows is definitely my favorite, and I would say actually my second favorite in this movie is Lizzie Kaplan as Janice. I think she does a great job.
Well, you picked right. Never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Janice is really like a really cool character in this movie, because to be honest with you, I think for the viewer, she is one of those people where you're like, no, I kind of would want to hang out with Janice, you know? Like, I definitely wouldn't want to be hanging out with the plastics.
Well, that's if you were looking for it, right?
Yeah, yeah. But I think, like, in terms of to the viewer, she is presented as that person that is like, no, that would be fun. It would be fun to hang out with Janice and Damien. And it would be terrible to hang out with the plastics, with Regina George and the rest of them. And yet, you know, like Lindsay Lohan gets sucked into this, and you see the dynamic of like, what's the difference between being a person who's trying to fit into this clique just to get back at them, and a person who's really just trying to fit in general and finding her niche and just filling it. And I think like you can, it's a really good way to show how people can have their egos inflated to the point where they lose sense of what they were trying to do in the first place. And that's really, you know, what Mean Girls is about. You have girls who talk behind their back and have this burn book, very mean to each other at surface level, really vain. And they're all just trying to do their own thing in certain ways. And, you know, ultimately the film's message is like, you just got to let it, just try to find avenues to let out that angst. Cause there's always going to be jealousy. There's always going to be teenage angst and hormones and things like that. But at the end of the day, they need avenues to get rid of that without having it be like super toxic. And it's kind of where the film ends and sets the atmosphere back to normal.
I would say, what a use of millennial talk to fugly.
Oh, yeah.
Slut and whore. You know, does anyone say slut or whore anymore? Fugly? Like, she's a fugly.
Grotsky. I think Grotsky skank. Was made up for this movie.
Skank. Does anyone say skank anymore? Like, you're a skank.
How about gruel has certainly a different meaning today than it did back then. I'll say that. Yeah, the film has definitely, like, it's kind of crazy to think, kind of sad to think, I guess.
Because you're like, oh, they don't phrase those words now. If you were at, like, asking a teen now, like, hey, do you know what a fugly means? And they're like, what the fuck are you talking about? And like, what?
Yeah. It's kind of the same as, you know, back in the late 80s when everyone was throwing out fag.
You're a fag.
You know? And now you watch those movies, you're like, ooh.
What? Well, I'm glad you say that because I'm halfway in between whether or not we're to blame for the current Israel and Palestine conflicts with the Delta Forces.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. But yeah, no, it kind of sits in that same area of like, especially, you know, if you grew up in that time frame, like, sure. Yeah. Those were words that we were bandying about. And now they're
flamer.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Whew. It was a rough time back then. It is funny though, just to think about it in terms of how technology and stuff changes.
I do think though, it's appropriate. It's something to kind of bring up. Cause if you were to like, you know, hamstring every like teenager that ever said something stupid like that. There's a lot of people, you know, who are like, oh, you're a fucking flamer. And now would probably be like, I'm a gay rights activist, you know.
Sure.
You know, care about it. Because again, there are words that I probably said when I was like, you know, a teen or kid that I was like, I don't fucking know what they say. Like everyone else is saying
that. Well, yeah,
like,
I mean,
oh, you know,
that's gay was a big thing that everybody would say back in the day.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really thought of anything really. Like it wasn't really literally meant to be a slur or anything like that. But it eventually was like, yeah, wow, that's a stupid thing to say because, you know.
Yeah. By the time you're old enough to kind of like, you know, parse it out. But I mean, you know, and there's parts like that in this film. And, but again, I don't think like to the people who are being like, you know, little bitchy Nestor is like, oh, this is a terrible film. I can't watch this. It's like, no, like none of the jokes that are made are in a poor taste or are overall like that offensive.
No, I mean, I think the only one that doesn't hit that well is the like multiple black people, African jokes that occur like right at the beginning of the movie. Cause you get like three of them and it's like, all right, it's kind of,
I got it. I think they still work though, because it's just ignorance. It's just white people ignorance. Like, oh, and you're welcome, our African student. To show the black girl, she's like, I'm from fucking Michigan.
Yeah, yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So
no.
it still works. You know, I don't think that's, you know, toes the line of being offensive to like.
And I think even like, you know, the film too, it does still stay lighthearted, because even the meanness of the Mean Girls, it pales in comparison to reality of what could be mean. You know what I mean?
And what a 16-year-old would concoct.
Yes.
The fact that like the closest they ever come to like super swearing is like
Rachel McAdams, like, oh, she's so effing done, you know.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, you know, going on actual tirade.
I mean, if you think about what teens are doing now that is mean, it's a lot meaner than what Mean Girls gets to. But I think the point still stands of what the movie does and what it tries to show is, you know, this happens between girls specifically. I mean, everybody, but girls specifically. And there's got to be a way to deal with it and to talk about it. And I think the film, too, brings up a lot of good points about how school doesn't do a very good job of dealing with some of these situations. Because one of the main things that it brings up quite a bit is like how health class is so futile. Especially in this movie, how the health class itself is just like, don't have sex. You will die. You will get pregnant and you will die. You'll get chlamydia and you will die. And the film kind of brings up the fact that like in at least in these terms, sometimes school is not that useful, you know? Like
why are you doubling up the phys ed teacher with health and life? All right, after we're done playing dodgeball, I'm gonna talk about why you have that wart on you. HPV.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, in you.
But it does, you know, it does bring up a good point, especially in terms of like what we do in school, because at the beginning when Katie's first going to school, she's like, I was never in a situation where like people didn't trust me, like. In school, you go and they immediately distrust you. They're like, where are you going? Going to the bathroom? Well, you need a pass. And there's a person in the hallway that's going to be watching where you go at all times. You know, you're in prison.
Great. It wasn't like that when, so again, we went to an incredibly small school. But I mean, I, and both of us, because we do have teaching degrees, from student teaching, you know, that's like, you know, kind of part parcel. And it's kind of funny to think about. It's like, kids just trying to take a piss.
Yeah.
Why not let the kid take a piss? Why you got to make like, here's your prick that you got to take to go take a piss. And so if anyone stumbles across you, whether they be administrative, teacher, aide, or whatever, they can be like, what are you doing? Going piss? All right. Go piss.
Go piss. Piss.
Like, it is ridiculous. And my old ass, like, I couldn't handle it now. If I were, like, school now, I'd be fucked because I piss every 45 minutes. So you know, I was like, you want to pee again? You don't have to pee again. It's like, no, I have to. I really have to.
I know. But it does, it just kind of brings up the way that school sometimes is not, you know, not the most effective means of educating, which I thought was funny. Yeah. Did you notice which Friday the 13th is playing during Halloween?
I did.
Which one?
Friday the 13th, part 2.
That's right. We got Baghead Jason.
You're welcome.
Good pick out there.
You're welcome. By the way, Lindsay Lohan's Halloween outfit. Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good.
Also,
she's
too.
Ex-wife.
Also, too, why does anyone like Regina George?
As a person or what?
I have never found Rachel McAdams to be that attractive.
Well, I agree.
So I don't get it.
You don't see the attraction. I agree as well. Like, for me, especially at the time, I definitely would have been more attracted to Lindsay Lohan or Gretchen Wieners. Even Amanda Seyfried.
I was a big Lacey Chabert, Lindsay Lohan, and Tina Fey person.
Oh, yeah. Even at the time, you were a Tina Fey person, huh?
It's those square glasses.
Yeah, we're.
She's funny. I like funny people, and she's a funny gal.
It's true. And bringing up Tina Fey, you know, she co-wrote this and also, you know, has a pretty big role in this movie as Lindsay Lohan's teacher and person who's trying to, like, kind of push her, you know, as a teacher.
I'm a pusher.
Yes. She's a pusher. And she also has, it even at the time, teachers weren't paid enough because she's got a second job as a bartender.
Three jobs.
So she has three jobs, but a second job as a bartender. And she's working at PJ Calamity's, and PJ Calamity's looks a lot like an office space. She's got a lot of flair going on.
Ew, you should get a room. Oh, what the fuck is it? It's not Fuddrucker. It's
no, it's but it's like that. It's like it's the same sort of like name.
Bennigan's.
Bennigan's. Yeah, that's right.
Bennigan's. Yeah. Yeah. See, you just start wearing it.
But in the
it's just wearing a shit ton of flair too.
In the office space though, it I guess the name of that is technically Tchotchkes. That's the actual bar.
Yeah,
she works at Tchotchkes.
Well, that's what they call the bits on the. No, you're right.
Yes, the bar is called Tchotchkes, and they have flair, mandatory flair. Oh, you know what what I wanted to talk about too with Mean Girls, that comes up is it pulls from a lot of different sources though. Because a lot of other like similar movies are getting referenced here. Like one that comes up to mind is Remy and Michelle's High School Reunion, because that one has Remy and Michelle pretending that they invented post-it notes. And in this movie, Gretchen Wiener's father invented the toaster strudel. So it's a very similar concept. And I find it hard to believe that was not meant to be like some sort of reference to Remy and Michelle's High School Reunion. Have you ever seen that movie?
No.
You've never? Well, I know what we're going to do on one of these episodes here.
Never even heard of it.
Oh, my God. Really? With Lisa Kudrow?
Nope.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, we're going to have to do that one.
I'm too busy watching Strangers with Candy.
We're going to have to do that one at some point. I find it hard to believe that this movie is not at least slightly referencing that they invented the post-it notes. Because it seems too hard to believe.
It is funny, though, because like the most random thing, like her dad invented the toaster.
I mean, speaking of like influence, do you think Clueless was a big influence on Mean Girls?
Yes.
I think it has to be.
Yeah. With the rich, oblivious, you know, families and the rich, oblivious, you know, because in Clueless, you know, they're all a bunch of insufferable douchebags at heart, you know. Well, even Paul Rudd is, you know, as our grounded collegiate man, is an insufferable douchebag because his family is such an insufferable douchebag. And Katie's basically, you know, and Janice are like our middle grounds, like our, you know, points, like, you know. And even still, if you think about it, in the grand scheme, like Katie is kind of insufferable too, because she comes from such a privileged family too. Like, yeah, she lived in Africa for, you know, in South Africa for 12 years. But her family's two zoologists. You know, they're doctorate. They have doctorates. Mm-hmm. And her mom's like got tenure at Northwestern. So it's not like, you know, I mean, yeah, she's a fish out of water, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, you're a rich asshole too, you know.
Yeah. One thing that I think is funny about this movie is, you know, the obsession with Aaron Samuels, right? John,
so
do you think he's worth the obsession? Is he that dreamy in this movie?
Those polos, how straight talking he is.
See,
he doesn't curse or anything. He doesn't drink at the parties. He plays soccer.
He's a gentleman. He's not going to force anybody into doing anything.
He's a shitty at math.
See, that this was I was Aaron Samuels in school. Played soccer, dreamy.
No, you didn't have
Aaron was Samuels. Not that great at calculus.
You didn't have hair like that.
I didn't have the hair. You're right. I didn't have the hair.
I had the hair like that.
Yeah. No, and I was Aaron.
No, he is the mid-2000s like heartthrob. He's got like, you know, the mop top polo. All that's missing is, you know, never been playing in the background. Like, you know. He's all right, you know, but again, like the fact that like he's such like a wholesome, like, and doesn't take any shits type of guy for him to be like, yeah, I like Regina.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that does kind of like the emperor. It's like, why? You know, she's a cunt. Like, what are you being like? Oh, she's okay, you know? And the same thing too, like, oh, Regina's telling you that, Katie's got, you know, like a shrine built to you, like she's fucking Helga and Hey Arnold. You're like, ooh, you fucking weirdo. You know.
Yeah. How do you feel about the burn book? What do you think about that? Do you think it would work out like the movie depicts?
I mean, again, nothing that's written in there is really that offensive.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst thing written is like, you're a fugly slut, or you have a fat ass. It's like, what? Who said I have a fat ass? Like, you know, like, not, like, again, like, I do, like, it's charming and cute in a way, because, again, like, nothing that's, like, written in there is really offensive, or anything that a teen would write, because teens are so pent up on hormones and, you know,
they are rough, ridiculously creatively evil.
You know, and you know, riding on every emotion that they feel. Like the fact that at the end, like, Regina George, like, she's a fugly slut, and that's like the worst thing that's written in there. It's like, no, sweetie, she'd be saying other things about.
Oh yeah, I mean, I can definitely think of way meaner things that even occurred at our school that, you know, are not even close to being the level. I guess the biggest things about the burn book that I think do work, though, that I think, you know, works for the film's narrative is when Tina Fey notices that, like, the thing that's in the burn book could only have been written by Katie, right? Because she's the only one that knows that she said, like, yeah, I'm a pusher, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, I like those because those are really references. Like, anybody could have said she's a fugly slut, right? Like, that's not, like, a personal thing. But when there are things in there that only certain people could have said, that's what I like the most about the burn book, because then, you know, they had to have written it.
The fact that, you know, Janice being called a dyke, that's easily, like, you know, kind of the most effective, especially, you know, when gay burns were kind of bandied about left and right back then. So.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, so just thinking realistically about the burn book, I think most people would just, like, let what was written there roll off their backs. They'd be like, ah, who cares? You know, somebody wrote I was a slut. I don't really care about that. But I think it helps lead us to that ending of the movie where we get the whole encounter in the gym where everybody's kind of, like, speaking to each other about what their issues are with each other, and then doing the trust fall into the group, asking for forgiveness. But I really like that.
I wish I could bake a cake of Ruthie and Bowen. That just, I wish everything was back to the way things were. Susan, go here. It's so great.
But I like that ending because, too, like, it's not like everybody just forgives each other and that's it. You have, like, a few people being really sarcastic about it, you know? Like, I'm sorry, I'm sorry that everyone's jealous of me.
Yeah, Lacey Chabert. Yeah, like, I'm sorry, I'm so popular. And then everyone steps aside. Karen's just saying, man.
And what do you think about the getting hit by a bus? Regina getting hit by a bus.
It's funny. It's topical because they show that in the beginning of the movie. Also, though, bad on the school district. Why is every bus going 45 miles?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, wow, that was going in unsafe, traveling in unsafe speed on the crosswalk roads here.
Yeah, like, all these kids, like, almost get hit by the bus throughout the film, and it's like, why are this bus going 45 miles an hour through school zone?
School administrator needs to step in and say, hey,
yeah,
stop. That's unacceptable.
That's not good. For you to be flooring it.
I'm thinking Regina's family made out big. On a lawsuit there.
The best part about Regina's family is when they're dressing up for Halloween, and it's the one time we get to be slutty. Nobody can say anything. And Amy Poehler's like, pictures, honey! And the dad's just sitting there with tears in his eyes, like, my daughter's a whore. It's the one time we get to see throughout the film Regina's dad. Hilarious. Like, I was just dying, like, oh, take the pictures, honey. You just see him, like, tear down his eyes. Like,
I know. I mean, I love the whole I'm a cool mom thing.
No, right. Amy Poehler is great. Like, I'm a cool mom. Is there alcohol in these drinks? No. But if you want anything, no, because I wouldn't let you drive home.
You know what? That's actually That's actually a responsible thing, though. I'd rather you do it at home.
It's responsible at the same time, though. Like, how would you feel as a parent, though, if your kids are, well, I'm going to get drunk? And you're like, okay, well, at least you're doing it here, you know?
I mean, I would probably discourage it, but again, I'd be happier.
I mean, again, I feel like it's almost prefaced by an ass whooping. Like, you're going to walk like you, you know, like, at least for me, like, I wouldn't be like, you're 16 years old. I'm like, I want to have, you know, we're going to be drinking. I'd be like, again, like, you know, no, you're not.
Yeah.
I guess I'm not a cool mom.
I guess you're not. Yeah. I like the school bus thing, because you think like, oh, maybe this film is almost over at that time. But no, it's still got like 15 minutes left where, you know, Katie has to kind of go and make up for what she's done wrong here. And she has to go and compete with the mathletes and, you know, win the spring fling. And it's kind of a nice little, it almost feels like the movie's over, and then it kind of hits you with a surprise. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. Like, sometimes when it feels like the movie's over, you're like, oh, why are we sticking around for another 15 minutes? But I don't think that's the case in Mean Girls.
Very she's all that with the spring fling and the, like, when Katie's having her own party.
Mm-hmm.
She comes down, very she's all daddy, you know.
Yep.
Very Rachel Lee Cookie.
Yep. Yep. So you like that at the end where basically at the spring fling, she's like, everybody's the spring fling queen. Here you go.
Throws it all out.
I like it because it's Tim Mills' response. They're like, you know, you don't have to do this.
You have to do a speech.
Yeah, come on, wrap it up. You know, we don't have to do any of this.
I mean, it's nice. But I mean, I think at the end of the film, like the kind of message, a little bit hollow. Like, you know, like, oh, don't be a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of, you know, worn out by then. So, like, Katie's message is falls on deaf ears. Not only that, though, I will say the biggest, like, sin of this film is having Lindsay Lohan be our protagonist, because who the fuck believes, like, you know, as you're watching this movie, like, Lindsay Lohan, like, I was in Africa. I don't know anything what the fuck's going on. It's like, I don't think Lindsay Lohan's bad in this film, but I don't think the fact that you have, like, a big titty girl to fill this role out as, like, you know, who's, like, a vixen at the time to be, you know, joined with the plastics makes any sense, because it's like, yeah, like, oh, you're socially retarded because... You've been living in, you know, South Africa for 12 years. But at the same time, it's like, well, it's not really relatable, because, again, it's like you show up and it's like, hey, everybody, here's my ass crack.
I mean, I think the film does kind of draw attention to that. Janice says you're a certified hottie, like they say.
No, like right off the bat. But again, like I think, because again, they make her like stupidly autistic in this film.
Yeah.
Like, again, just because she grew up in South Africa, she's like, I don't understand. Like, I don't know any of this. And like her and Neil Flynn, God bless his beautiful soul as a janitor in Scrubs. God bless him. Like, I grounded her. Oh, grounding her means I shouldn't let her go. It's like, you're a fucking adult. Who cares if you're a zoologist? Like, what do you mean you don't understand the concept of grounding you? Grounding a child? Like, and what that entails? Like, I get it. It's done for laughs. It is kind of funny because Anna Gasteyer is like, oh, you know. But at the same time, it's like, you fucking idiot. Like, like, what? Did you grow up? Where the fuck did you live your entire life? Like, you know, I mean, like, you know, it doesn't translate. It's funny, but at the same time, like, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about? So, I mean, I do think Lindsay Lohan does a very good job as Katie. But at the same time, like, making her so socially stupid, it's necessary to kind of generate the plot, but at the same time, it's like what do you mean she wouldn't have any, like, idea, like, half the shit?
Yeah.
Like, you know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, she is really naive, and the film is naive. It's sort of the same idea that a lot of those films have, where it's, like, taking, you know, taking a woman who is, like, oh, she's so ugly, like, she's, you know,
yeah,
like, really a makeover.
Like, you're watching She's All That, and it's like,
yeah.
Rachel Lee Cook, like, oh, this big titted overall artist so stupid. And it's like, no, no one says that.
She's hideous. You know, I agree. It has the same idea. It looks like the Mean Girls 2024 actually is doing that a little bit better. It does have much more of a plain Jane type girl cast in Katie's role. And it does look like that makes more sense because, like you said, by this time, Mean Girls coming out, Lindsay Lohan was known for being, like you said,
she was a big
that time.
She was a big deal, like, you know, especially at the Freaky Friday and all, like, you know, curse. She had her music coming out at the same time, so like the idea of like, oh, who is this girl? It's like, no, good and well, who the fuck this is?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's hard to believe. In those terms, but I still think that the idea of the film kind of comes across. It works pretty well. What do you think of the whole idea, like basically Damien being around? Because I like Damien a lot. I think he's a really good character.
Hilarious.
Later in the end, like at the end of the movie, when they call the girls to the gym, and he's in there with the hood on.
Hilarious. His best part is when he's driving Janice around at Lindsay's
party. He's like, I'm not stopping this car.
I can't stop this car. Apparently, I already passed curfew. Curfew's 1 o'clock. It's 10. Like, he's fucking hilarious. He's amazing. He's beautiful. And I'm all here for Damien. Like, the support that I, you know, he's beautiful. And, It does nail down to kind of that idea. Okay? I don't know how many people would get it, but like the fact that like, oh, he's too gay to function. It's like, you're friends with him, you get him and you understand him, and it's okay to say that compared to how this film treats him. Like, oh, when Katie says it offhandedly as like a remark, oh, he's too gay to function. Like, oh, that's so good. Put it in the book, you know?
Yep.
It's kind of good to, like, you know, as kind of as a reminder of, like, you know, like, if you don't know that person and understand them or understand, like, their, you know, their values and their life, like you can, and if you do, like, you know, you're more, you can relate to that and you can make jokes about it compared to others, you know,
yeah, it's,
who are outsiders.
It's like an affectionate joke if you know them, but it's not if you're not friends with them. You don't know them. Yeah. Yeah, I love Damien. Damien's great. Like I said, you definitely, like, even as a viewer, you definitely are like, oh, I love Janice and I love Damien. Like, those are people that I really want to hang out with. And then, you know, you see Katie gravitate towards the plastics anyway. And I think you're meant to be, as a viewer, you're meant to be like, no, don't do that. Don't go to the plastics. Don't go to the dark side. So I think the film does a really good job doing, like, making that known. You know, there's that gravitational pull from the plastics. It's great. All right, so let's give Mean Girls. No, what do you got?
No, we got a lot. So, who's your favorite Mean Girl?
To be honest with you, my favorite Mean Girl is Karen.
You like Amanda Seyfried more?
I as a character, yes, because I think she's very funny in the. Like, cause she knows it too. They're basically like, oh, you're not stupid, Karen. And she's like, no, well, I am, you know, and it's kind of funny. It's just like, she knows that she's not very smart and rolls with it anyway. No, I like Karen. I think.
See, okay. So the whole reason I brought this up is cause, for years I had been, Lacey Chabert stan. And I still am to this day. Lacey Chabert is the best of them. And it's not just because she is a pretty cool gal, but she's hilarious. She looks great, makes great jokes. Like, the whole Caesar scene is great. When she's like, she's totally like also too, because I mean, even though it's technically for them 11th grade and 10th grade, we did Caesar. In my head, all I can think of is like reading the soliloquy of Brutus in 10th grade and of Caesar and how that kind of played out in reality, but also with, you know, we should totally kill Brutus.
Yeah.
Lacey Chabert is great in this film. I love her. Love her to death. She's great. National treasure. Can't wait for us to do a Lacey Chabert Christmas. She's the best. She's just so, like, fully realized and fun. And also, too, everyone has, like, one of those friends that you tell a secret to, and they're like, I'll keep it secret. And then they fucking tell everyone. They're like, don't tell him I told you. And then everyone knows your secret. Yeah. Everyone has a friend like that, too. You know, she's great. And, too, watching her slowly just kind of, like, go off the rails with her sanity due to what's going on, you know, and the sabotage of, between her and Regina is great. You know, like, oh, I've always been on your left. Like, well, you're not the tallest, so you need to get on the right. God, you know.
Yeah, I think Gretchen gets the best part of the Mean Girls, you know, the plastics. She has to do a lot with that part. I think, honestly, Rachel McAdams gets the least amount to do. Though she's the head plastic, though she's the one that has to be, like, the most alluring part of the plastics at the beginning of the movie, I do think she doesn't really get that much to do. Which is why Gretchen and Karen kind of shine above her. Like, there are some great parts from Regina. I'm not going to, you know, take that away from her.
Boo you, whore. Boo.
Yeah. You know, obviously there are a lot of catchphrases that, you know, Regina gets specifically, you know, get in, bitches, we're going shopping, stuff like that. But I feel like she doesn't get that much to do specifically. Like, probably some of the best ones are when she's, you know, like, going through her period where she's, they're trying to, like, sabotage her, getting her, you know, her shirt cut, and then she wears it as a, you know, a fashion statement and stuff like that.
Yeah,
those are probably the best.
That wouldn't fly at our school.
They'd be pulling you left and right. Put on this oversized shirt that was in the Lost and Found.
You can see nipple cut out. Aaron's walking around.
But I think, you know, I think she doesn't really have the best part. Gretchen gets the best. I like Karen a lot because she is on the sidelines, but she also has a, you know, it's just a really funny character. It's almost kind of like, you know, Stephen Colbert's character in Anchorman. Brick.
You mean Steve Carell?
Or Steve Carell, I mean, yeah. Not Steve Colbert. All right, so we got to give Mean Girls a rating. On a scale of 0 to 10, rock-hard nipples from Amy Poehler being chewed on by a dog. What would you give Mean Girls?
She's cool. I'll give Mean Girls a 9.5 out of 10. I love Mean Girls. I think it still holds up to the test, you know, still stands the test of time. It is a teen comedy. I think it's hilarious. I think Tina Fey does a really good job with the screenplay. It's great. Everybody here is hilarious. Tim Meadows is an unsung hero. Hilarious. Every line that he delivers is in that Tim Meadows savvy, kind of understated style. Same thing with Tina Fey. Tina Fey does a great job too. Amy Poehler, great. You know, with all her shenanigans in this, as, like, you know, Regina George's mom being that stereotypical, I'm a cool mom. I do think Lindsay Lohan is great in this movie. She's a very good job. You know, she's very attractive, aloof, at the same time, you know, relatable as a fish out of water. I think, as you said, Lizzie Kaplan's the best in this. She does a great job as being somebody relatable, that you would want to be friends with, and also, too, because of Daniel Francis as Damien. They're just a great cohort, you know, want to be friends with. And the story that we see that kind of unfolds of Lindsay falling in with the plastics, Rachel McAdams, Lacey Chabert, and Amy Seyfried do a great job. Very relatable. Very at the time. This film was great. This is a millennial classic, and I usually watch this film at least once a year. It's a film, going into this, I didn't even have to watch, kind of, to, you know, to get a refresher, but I did anyway because I love it. It's a great movie. I say 9.5 out of 10. I love it, and I will sing its praises. The fact that we didn't even mention you Google it, Coco, kind of a shocker, you know? Yeah. There's a billion lines in this film that are quotable.
a lot of little moments in this film that are quotable and relatable too. I'll be interested to see what the 2024 remake is going to do. I don't have high hopes for it, even though Tina Fey is involved. But, you know, Mean Girls is a millennial classic, hands down. And if you're a millennial, it's going to hit all of the right notes in spite of the fashion being fucking terrible.
I mean, I'm not going to go as high as a 9.5. I would probably give it an 8.5 out of 10. I think it's a really fun movie. Like you said, it is quotable, relatable, especially for people who grew up at this time frame and in high school, which would be us. It's got a lot of fun moments to it. There's a lot of great characters. Like we pointed out, Tim Meadows is awesome. Lizzie Kaplan's great. You know, everybody that pretty much is not part of the Plastics is really great in terms of what they bring to the movie. The Plastics themselves are really good because of how they portray the Mean Girls. I think Lindsay Lohan is really good in here. You know, she gets a lot of shit for a lot of the other stuff she's done more recently. But she's really great in Mean Girls. Does a good job. And I think that the movie itself does a really good job of portraying, you know, high school antics and really hits a very specific time period. It may not work as well for people now, but I think, you know, if you have that nostalgia for the time frame, it does a lot of the same things that, like, She's All That did and Clueless did in a different, you know, era. And I think that Mean Girls does a really good job. It still holds up today. It's still a lot of fun to watch. The jokes don't really get old. So I had a lot of fun revisiting it because it's been a while since I've actually watched it. And it was really great to have that experience again. All right, so I think we're going to take another week off and we will come back and I don't know. What have we got? Because I see if we were to come back, I think Thanksgiving releases on the 21st.
So it's just She and I if it came out.
I don't really. Oh, no. Perfect timing, actually. It releases on the 17th. So if we were to we come back in 2 weeks and we will have Thanksgiving for you. Because we'll be able to see it in theaters and then do the episode. Perfect time for Thanksgiving. So I think that's the plan. I'm interested because I need to see what Eli Roth is churning out next after fucking his Death Wish remake. Because he got cooked up.
7 years for him to fucking do.
I know.
I can't believe we saw that piece of shit movie. In fact, when they released the footage of Bruce Willis with his dementia at home with Demi Moore and such, celebrating happy birthday, I said, fuck you, Bruce Willis. Shitty death wish. I hope you die.
Oh, my God.
It's a bad movie. Leave it off for me. You can't even do Death Wish now because country's on a historic loan crime, so it'd be like, oh, thank you, and you for what? Dumb and Porky. Bronson's a man who can't stand Dumb Porky.
Yeah, I am excited to see what Thanksgiving's about. Eli Roth's return to horror. He hasn't really done much in horror for a while. He's, you know, he did Knock Knock in 2015, but he did a kids movie in 2018, House of Clock in This Walls. He's done like a documentary. He's done like a short.
He's doing a Borderlands movie?
Yeah, apparently he's doing that as well.
Well, isn't that like 12 years too fucking late?
So
who's been thinking of Borderlands since 2014?
Yeah. I mean, so that's the thing. I don't know what to expect from Thanksgiving at all. So it'll be interesting to see what he does with it.
I guess we need to do Cabin Fever next.
Yeah.
let's do Cabin Fever next and then do
whatever the fuck it is.
Thanksgiving?
Yeah. You don't need to remember much. It's just the name of the holiday. So.
I know. Well, it's after the Grindhouse bit. Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So that'll be our next episode, Thanksgiving. A Thanksgiving movie. So you want to stay tuned for that. And then we'll be going into Christmas. Probably right after that. Getting in all of our Christmas movies. Are we doing Elise's Chabert Christmas this season?
If we can find the means, yeah.
I think we could.
I would love to do a Lacey Chabert.
Let's just do it. Soon we'll roll right in from Mean Girls into a Lacey Chabert Christmas. All of those Hallmark movies.
That means we have to watch them together because you have cable and I don't.
Yeah.
Can't do them separate. Your wife's going to have to deal with me. Come on, Lacey. Put those billboards up, but also find a date.
Well, you definitely want to check that out. So you should subscribe to us on pretty much any podcast app that you can think of. We're at Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Homemix at anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. I'm actually not even sure Google Podcasts and Stitcher exist anymore, but whatever podcast app you use, we're on it. So subscribe, leave us a nice review. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. You can write to us. And we have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. Write to us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, what movies you want to have us take into consideration, and we will see if we want to cover them.
Jesus Christ. She's already been in 30 films.
Oh, my God. Well, we have our work cut out for us then to pick some.
Let's just look at her Wikipedia. It's like, Lacey Chabert has already been 30 Hallmark
movies. Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll have to go through and pick out the best ones. I'm sure they're all the same.
Well, I, in Vermont, all of my heart and love, the sweetest Christmas, my secret Valentine, love on safari, all of my heart, the wedding, Pride, Prejudice, and Mistletoe.
Oh, my God. No need to go. Wait.
Love, romance, and chocolate.
Maybe we just start from the beginning and just... This is just part one of the Lacey Chabert Christmas. Yeah, so stay tuned for our holiday season as we get into all these different kinds of Christmas and Thanksgiving episodes. Hope you stay tuned. Thanks for listening, and until next time.
Take care, Lacey Chabert.